XYZ ballot breakdown.
Ballot breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot.
AZ ballot breakdown.
All right, we do this every day at 10:05, and we're going to do it right now. Former President Donald Trump leads President Joe Biden by 6 percentage points in a new national poll, this one from CNN, with nearly half of voters saying they're planning to place their support behind Trump this fall. 49-43 is the split in this poll. Although we have seen them shrinking in swing states, I don't think any of this is definitive, but that's with the track that it's on right now. The path to victory, I saw this from thehill.com, both of them needing to win the swing states. How is Arizona going to fare? How much will, there are a couple of things that have happened recently. Will this whole thing about the electors affect Donald Trump with independent voters? It's not, with Republican voters, it continues to solidify the Trump base. I'm going to tell you that in that regard, there are many, many people, and there are some independents in the same way that keep saying, everybody keeps saying we have to move on. When the Republicans kept talking about election denial, and I was a Republican saying it, I've been one of the most vocal public Republicans that have said from the beginning of the argument about the 2020 election, at some point you have to move on. At some point, you have to realize, complain about what happened, tell the people they have a right to be upset, but move on. I've been saying this since 2020. Well, now here we are. We're in 2024, just weeks away from the Republican primary. And now you've got the other side of the aisle filing charges at a time when many people are saying, I thought you people said you wanted to move on. I thought we needed to move forward. What damage was done? What happened? Joe Biden won the election. It was certified. It was certified. The Secretary of State won the governor's office. I want you to think about that. The person, the Secretary of State in Arizona, who when the Republicans went after her for certifying Arizona's election and doing what she did, they went after her with both barrels in the court of public opinion. And it backfired on them so much that she won the governor's office. That's Governor Katie Hobbs. When you look nationally, the vice president of the United States did his job and certified the election. Our governor at the time, Doug Ducey, did the same thing. So all of this stuff happened. And now all of a sudden, 4 years later, you're going to continue the fight. I say this because how many voters in America roll their eyes on both sides of the political aisle when we start arguing and fighting about the 2020 or the 2022 election with everything else the nation has to face? And that's what a lot of these polls are showing. There was a recent interview that was done with Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, and he said, I believe that America is going to vote its problems and it's not going to vote based on the former president's legal problems. And a lot of these polls are starting to lean that way. We don't know that for sure. I will say this. If the economy begins or continues to track the way it is, then I do believe that this election is former President Trump's to lose. Because generally speaking, people vote with their wallets. People didn't like some of the things, let's say a lot of things to be fair, that the former president did as president. They weren't necessarily complaining about a lot of his policies. They didn't like the tweets. They didn't like the statements. They didn't like the criticism and the crass behavior. They thought it was uncalled for. So given an opportunity, they voted for someone else who said, we're going to bring the country together. We're going to unify America. I remember vividly Joe Biden saying to everyone, and this was before he was President Biden, which is why I called him Joe Biden. I remember Joe Biden saying that I'm a Democrat, but I'm going to be a president for all Americans. And that is not the presidency that many people see this. And this isn't just Republicans saying it. They were going to vote for him anyway. But now we're looking at this new polling that's out, the pathway to winning this. Now, here's an interesting part of this. Biden and Trump supporters are sharply divided by the media they consume. I love this story because what it does is it talks about, and I have family members, I know people that are just that. They want to hear what they want to hear, and that's what they go to consume. I'm not calling it wrong. I'm saying it's accurate. If you're someone that wants to hear that the Republicans have to win or this country is going down the toilet, you're going to tune into Fox News. There's no doubt about that. If you are someone that hates Donald Trump, you think that he should be found guilty and then burned at the stake, not necessarily in that order, then you're going to turn on MSNBC. There has been a recent complaint about NPR being way too far left, and this was somebody from with NPR that said it, but I want to take you back in this. Dan Rather makes his return to CBS News 18 years after a bitter departure. I know this seems like centuries ago, but Dan Rather was one of the most respected people in media, in the news business. He was seen as one of the premier anchors of all time, really. You know, whether it was, you know, Cronkite was certainly the master. Walter Cronkite is still always going to be the guy. But you would say that Dan Rather had to be somebody in consideration for the Mount Rushmore of news. Well, Dan Rather was found to be using suspicious documents in a hit piece against George W. Bush, President Bush, during his reelection cycle in 2004. And it had to do with the president's service in the National Guard. And it turned out that they used documents that were false, that he either knew were false and did it anyway, or should have known they were false and did it anyway, or should have done more homework. And it cost him his entire career. This was a guy that made his bones during the Vietnam War as a stellar correspondent of the Vietnam War, moved into being this huge reporter and then an anchor, and a trusted voice in news forever. His career was over in 2005. They got rid of him at CBS. Now he's back and he's defending himself, so to speak. But I'm bringing this up because depending on what news you consume, if you believe one thing or another, but here's the beauty of what's changing. And I do mean this. With all of the access that you have to information, you know, when you tune into this show, when you listen to me, if you listen to me, I'm going to give you accurate information and I'm going to give you my opinion on it. And you can tell the difference. I don't hide from my bias. I don't hide from my political leanings. I don't do any of it as journalism. I tell you right out of the gate, this is what happened and this is what I think about what happened. And if you like that, I'm glad you listen. But I'm not considered a news source to people. And if I were the only, I've said many times, I should not be the only news source that you get. You don't have to believe me. Fact check me. If I tell you something, you don't believe it to be true, go and fact check it. You may not agree with my opinion, but if I give you something factual, when I tell you there is a report that is 49-43, a CNN poll that shows Donald Trump leading Joe Biden 49-43, that's a fact. You may not agree with my interpretation of why it's happening, but that's where we are. We are in a place that I think is good, where you can go anywhere to get as much information as possible. And we trust that you're going to be intelligent enough to decipher fact from opinion once you're an adult. And these news sources, there's one, there was a girl that's she said she was black-pilled. She's an OnlyFans. She's on OnlyFans. She's a young girl. And she talks about being on Instagram and on other platforms where she was asked to do stories and commentary, but don't call them an ad. The Biden administration said, here, do this, take this position. Here's your opinion on this, but don't call it an ad. And now she's saying, I'm done doing that. People are smarter than they give them, than you give them or they are given credit for. In a moment, we're going to go back to the U.S. economy because I think this is the direction. This will be the decider for the Americans come this election cycle. We'll talk about why that is in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, a Wall Street Journal headline, and this is from, I guess it was from yesterday. Even if the Fed's cut rates, the days of ultra low rates are over. And obviously, this is an opinion piece. It's from someone, obviously, that knows the economy, but say soaring budget deficits and investment needs mean the neutral interest rate may be higher. We have to understand, and I go back to the Reaganism every time I talk about it, and I'm going to do it early. We do not have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. I will tell you that when you we talk about the rich, I have some friends that are wealthy and I'm very proud of them because I knew them when they weren't wealthy. That's the part of this that I think most people don't talk about. And I wish wealthy people would defend themselves publicly. I really do. The stories in America of American wealth by people that came from nowhere are stories that are inspirational to many people. What got me to being in any form of success as an electrician and then a business owner, and I was not a good business owner. I made a lot of mistakes, and I want to start another business just to make and not make those mistakes again. I don't know if it'll be as a contractor, but I do want another business. Is because overcoming mistakes is a part of the success. I just played golf with some friends of mine this weekend, and it's amazing to see my friends be successful. And I'm very happy for them because I knew them when they were fighting it out. And what I mean is fighting the economy and fighting taxes and fighting people that work for you that don't show up and people that don't do what they say they're going to do and customers that don't pay you and having to get lawyers and... It's a tooth and nail fight. What ends up happening is a segment of our society sees the bottom line and sees, oh my gosh, that person made this much money. Well, tax the hell out of them because they don't need all that money. Pay your fair share. That's what the president of the United States keeps saying. But what's happening is we are throwing money at a government that's wasting our money. As much money as we put, and it should be us against them. All of my friends out there, if you're out there listening and you're not a conservative, you're not a Republican, you may be an independent or you lean Democrat, or you are staunch in your beliefs as a Democrat, why is it that we as a citizenry are not angry, and especially you that believes in high taxes for the rich? Why aren't you the angriest when you have to defend the insane spending? Now, it's both parties, but I want to shrink the government. I want to take that money away from them that they keep wasting. Your political beliefs believe that we are better off with a big government that solves more of our problems, that society is better off. And that's an accurate statement. I'm not mocking anyone. But your idea of tax the rich, pay your fair share, the tax cut should be gone. I like the idea of 44.6% capital gains tax because people that are wealthy should be able to pay 44.6% on millions and millions of dollars in real estate. You believe that to be true, but we're giving it to a government that continues to waste money and spend at deficits. We've got headline after headline after headline. Here's another one, that there will be severe irreversible scars to America if the national debt goes unchecked. According to a brand new report, that our national debt could hit $141 trillion in 30 years. It's insane what we're doing. And this should be the American citizens reigning in its government. That was the intent. I think everybody would agree with that. At the founding of our country, the founding fathers did not want to be controlled by a government, this taxation without representation, the Boston Tea Party, the things that were the founding cornerstones of our government had to do with taxation, but it had to do with government telling us what to do, telling us how to worship and who to worship. Telling us we couldn't speak out against the government, what we could say and what we couldn't say. All of these things are the cornerstone of building a government that is of the people. And here we are still with those same powers, but we are not using them. That's what's frustrating to me. I would never be good at running for office because I would not speak to the people that need to be spoken to. If it were up to me, I wouldn't speak to the registered voters. As often. I mean, I would, but not as often. I would speak to the people that are not registered to vote or the people that are registered to vote that haven't voted in many elections because they're disillusioned by the process. Those are the people that can fix things. Those are the people with the same kind of strong opinions, whether you voted for me for office or not. But those fresh ideas, new opinions, and disillusionment with the government, those are the people that are going to make the changes. We have got week after week, we are seeing story after story of experts from across the globe that are saying, because the world's invested in the American economy. If the American economy goes south, it is going to hurt the economies across the world because it's so big. And there are many experts across the world that are saying the International Monetary Fund, if the U.S. economy is on an unsustainable path, You look at the U.S. government, you look at what it's doing, and we should be joining each other in shrinking its size. It is the inflation being caused by borrowing money and printing money that is causing the bulk of our problems. And there's a segment of our society that is pumping its fist in the air and cheering the idea that we are going to raise taxes once again on businesses, and we're going to raise capital gains taxes, and we're going to put more money into this government. And at some point, it's going to have to stop. At some point, it's going to have to stop. The Arizona Supreme Court denies our Attorney General's motion to reconsider the abortion case. We're going to talk about the implications of that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, appreciate you spending some time with us. Talked about this a little earlier. The Arizona State Supreme Court was petitioned by the Attorney General's office to reconsider their abortion ruling, and it was a 32-page motion, and in one sentence they denied this. And I will tell you that most people, the Attorney General disagrees with this. Again, much smarter than I am, she's an attorney. But in talking with people on both sides of the issue, speaking with Congressman Greg Stanton, who is a very vocal pro-choice advocate and thinks that the law needs to be repealed, the 1864 law or 1977 law, depending on who you ask to, needs to be repealed. He is someone that believes that Roe v. Wade should have stayed the way that it was. I asked him, do you think the Arizona State Supreme Court made the right decision? He said legally, yes, they had no choice. The way that law was written, they made the right choice. Talking to people that are definitely pro-life said the same thing. They made the right choice legally. The way the law was written was that this is not meant to supersede any law. If Roe v. Wade is ever sent back to the states, and that's what the Dobbs decision did, that the new law that was a few years ago, 2 years ago, signed by the former Governor Ducey, that law was never intended to supersede previous laws. So let's say it's 1977, not 1864, but it would go back to that law, which the only concession it made, exception I should say, the only exception it made in an abortion was for the life of the mother. So what we've had coming down the tracks for quite a while now, ever since Roe was turned back to the states, and then Arizona had this 15-week law that passed in 2022, is there's an organization called Arizona for Abortion Access, and they've written a one-page referendum that they've got enough signatures to get on the ballot. And it looks innocuous. It looks like it just protects abortion, but many people are saying it goes too far. But one of the things that bothers me about this entire argument is the demonization of people that are pro-life. And I don't know that I've done a good enough job of defending those people, not myself. I don't need to defend myself. I'm comfortable in what I believe. But when you're in the political world, and there are many elected officials now whose jobs are in danger because they're pro-life, even in the referendum, even in the Arizona for Abortion Access referendum, it acknowledges that at some point in a pregnancy, they call it viability, that at some point in a pregnancy, it becomes a human life. Otherwise, they wouldn't have used that word viability. So it is, you know, up until nobody can intervene, nobody can interfere with a woman's right to get an abortion. It's a decision between her and a healthcare professional until viability of the pregnancy. Once there's viability in the pregnancy, in other words, once it is a viable human life, then abortion shouldn't be allowed. And I think their number is 24 weeks. It talks about viability. You will hear some extremists that will say that a woman has a right to abort the pregnancy. If you truly believe that this is just about a woman's right to choose, and it's all her body, then she should be able to have an abortion up until the moment of childbirth. Most, I would say 95% of Americans would disagree with that. Maybe the number is even higher. So we have been wrestling with when life begins ever since this issue became an issue. And so why is it that the pro-life crowd isn't arguing there? And I want to defend them for because I'm picturing in my mind, and I'm not going to name names, I'm picturing in my mind many people that I know that are adamantly pro-life. And these are good people. I'm not specifically talking about the Speaker of the House and Ben Thoma here from the Arizona legislature, but he's the one that reminded me of that when he was in studio last week. And the reason why is he was very measured in his response. He was very kind in the way he responded to things. And in my conversation with him off the air, this is somebody that believes this is a child. And our job is to save as many children's lives as we can. And in his preference, with the exception of maybe, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, I don't know, with the exception of the mother's life being threatened or abortion or rape or incest, that abortion shouldn't be allowed, I think would be his preference. I don't know specifically where he stands, but I do know that he believes life begins much earlier than others do. And I challenge you, if you want to, if you have the courage, it's not a pretty thing to see. You don't have to look at the abortion pictures. If you don't look at the abortion pictures, it is. Go online yourself and look at pictures. You can find them of the stages of pregnancy and development of a child. And you go and look at how far developed a child is at 15 weeks. Hard to argue that it looks like a child. But again, we live in a society where my opinion is not the only opinion. I don't get to make the rules, but I do get to argue my position. The pro-life crowd has their political lives being threatened, not their physical lives, their political lives being threatened because they want to save as many children from abortions as they possibly can. And I just think that that's silly. You agree, if you are someone that's ready to sign on to the referendum, that there is a point in the pregnancy where the mother should not have a right to terminate that pregnancy because they use the word viability of pregnancy, with the exception of the life of the mother. That's the way this referendum is written. If your healthcare professional believes your life is in danger, you should be able to have an abortion up until the point of viability and beyond that if it's for the life of the mother. Your mental health is taken into consideration up until the point of viability or beyond the point of viability if it's an emotional disaster, however it's written. But they talk about viability of the pregnancy. They use that word. So at some point, the vast majority of people realize that at some point, it is no longer a woman's right to destroy that pregnancy because it's a human being that deserves constitutional protection. So what we're really arguing about is when life begins. One group of people says life begins at conception, and it should be considered a pregnancy and a child at conception, and that pregnancy should be protected because that is a child that is growing. And there are other people that are saying, well, I don't believe your belief. It's not spiritual for me. I don't believe that. I believe that there's a viability point where, yes, it is a child. And at that point, it should be protected. But we're still arguing about life. And the demonization of pro-life people because they want to save as many children as they can should be applauded. It shouldn't be condemned, and we certainly shouldn't be making them out to be politically evil because they don't want abortions. If you go and look at the protests that are out there against the pro-life crowd, it always seems to point at the pro-life crowd wanting to somehow put women under their control. And I just wish there was a better way to make that argument because I don't think that's where the argument lies. But this isn't going away. I think that you are going to see the Senate take it up this week. The Senate's going to repeal the 1864 law. The governor's going to sign it. And then in 90 days after this session is over, it's going to go back to the 15 weeks. And in November, the voters in Arizona are going to have at least one choice on the ballot of what they want to do with the topic of abortion. Coming up in a moment, Governor Hobbs is vetoing more bills. One is curious to me in particular. I'll talk about which one it is coming up in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, Minutes. As we get ready to approach our final hour of the show, don't forget in the next hour at 11:20 every day we do Did You Hear This as a way to catch up on the big headlines. So if you're going to be out and about, jumping in the car for lunch, join us then. Senate Bill 1129. There have been a bunch of vetoes again by the governor. I'm confused by some of them. I don't know how it's going to be received when she's up for re-election. I guess we're going to find out. I understood. I mean, she set records. She set a record for 1 year. She set a record for entire terms by governors. She's not even close to being done with her first term, and she's vetoing things. I mean, if you say this is about Republican extremism, let me explain why I think this is a little bit of a weak argument. The last Democrat governor Arizona had was Janet Napolitano, who was a very liberal governor. I don't mean that as a criticism. It's an observation. So much so, she left the governor's office before the end of her second term because she was chosen to be the Homeland Security Secretary under Barack Obama. So if you're new to Arizona, that was the last Democrat governor we had. And she had a lot of vetoes then, but she was also dealing with a state legislature that had an enormous majority of Republicans in both the House and the Senate. You can go back and look at how it was divided up. It was an enormous majority of Republicans. This governor is dealing with a legislature that has a one-seat majority for Republicans in the House and the Senate. One seat. So she's not dealing with the same kind of majority. And so we're talking about extremism, and there are extremist things that get done in minds of some. But this is just different. She vetoed the tamale bill. She signed it this time with some changes. I don't want to get too much into the tamale bill was, but it was a bill about home cooked food being sold by people that had huge bipartisan support. And for whatever reason, the governor didn't like it, so much so that her party was angry at her for vetoing that bill. So I thought, okay, well, maybe we'll see something different. She has set a record in the first couple of years, and not even first 2 years yet of her term are over, but in the first two sessions of the legislature as governor, she has already set a record of more vetoes than any other governor that served two terms. And so I think that that may backfire a little bit as she continues to say she wants to work with her Republican colleagues on things. But one of the things that she vetoed was what known as the squatter's bill. Senate Bill 1129 would have allowed a property owner or their agent to ask law enforcement to immediately remove someone of unlawfully occupying their residence. Anyone refusing to comply would be committing trespass. The bill garnered bipartisan support. It says some, but bipartisan support. But Hobbs said in her veto letter that it fails to leverage existing legal mechanisms, respect the due process rights of lawful tenants, and minimize unintended consequences, such as for victims of domestic violence. So it's interesting that this again had bipartisan support. One of the biggest issues around this country right now is squatters navigating and finding loopholes in tenant rights laws. I am someone, I spent a lot of my time growing up renting apartments, my mom did, renting apartments and renting places to live from people where you had nowhere else to go, living hand to mouth, barely paying your rent. It wasn't as if my mom had a bunch of money saved up that if the landlord was a jerk of a landlord, and I can name two or three that were horrible slumlords, that my mother needed to have rights. And if she didn't have her rights protecting her, we may have lost our place to live because of horrible landlords. So I know they exist. But when you have people that are abusing those laws, you have to close those loopholes to protect the tenants, because there's going to be a backlash. If you have a rental property, you are going to write leases in such a way that you're going to be having people sign things, and you're going to be diligent to make sure people pay their rent. If you have an unoccupied property, what are landlords supposed to do? What are property owners supposed to do? Again, a lot of people that have properties that are out for rent are people that buy these homes as a part of their retirement. In other words, they make sure that they have they make sure that they have this property so that when they retire someday, that income is passive income for their retirement years. Or they're going to sell their properties and they're going to use the money, the proceeds, to live off of in retirement. These are not big, huge conglomerates, and it wouldn't matter if they were. But what happens when someone, let's say there's a couple out there, they're in their mid-30s, maybe early 40s. They bought a second home to use as a rental property, or the primary residence they had for a long time, they're using that primary residence because the payment is probably lower, and they've moved people into that home. They're using it as a rental property, but there's no way that they could pay two mortgages on their own. So they have to make sure they keep a renter in there. And then you get a squatter in your home. Now you can't pay your mortgage. You got to worry about these people destroying your property. And there are laws now being proposed that would protect that and just getting vetoed. I don't understand that. I understand the political differences, even if I disagree with the governor, and I do respectfully on many things. And I've had respectful conversations with her, very respectful conversations. I'm not a disrespectful person of the people I disagree with politically. I don't understand how this does anybody in Arizona any good. It is a major issue for people that have rental properties. There was a reasonable solution that had bipartisan support, and you vetoed it, which means at a minimum, it has to be rewritten. Why isn't there negotiations going on behind the scenes to what will reasonably pass in the legislature and then signed by the governor? It's not as if these things get to her desk and they're a surprise. There's conversations that have along through the legislative process with the people that you want to sign on to the bill and how they will or how they won't vote for it, or why they will or why they won't vote for it, and the governor's office about why she will or why she won't sign it. How does something this important get passed without her knowing about it and not signing it? It's worrisome to me. Coming up just after 11 o'clock, ASU police make 72 arrests in a pro-Palestinian protest. We're going to talk about that next.